Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
You know, this is such a story of people who turn their back on the Lord. But then there's a point where they begin to experience the consequences. And thankfully, plenty of times they come to their senses. If you have a prodigal, if you have a wayward loved one, pray they come to their senses.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Gospel of Luke. Join us as Pastor Brian resumes his teaching on Luke chapters 15 through 16. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
You know, he goes into the prisons and into the jails, and he shares the gospel, and he teaches Bible studies and things like that. And after these guys serve their sentences and they come out, then, of course, they need to find a church. So he goes to a pretty well-known church in the area. It has a long history of evangelical faith. It's a very wealthy church, filled with people with lots of money and, you know, people who are living in that sort of affluent world. So this is his church. He's been there for a long time. And so he starts bringing some of these guys who have been released from prison, he starts bringing them to church. And it wasn't too long before the elders pulled him aside and said, "Hey, you know, what are you doing? Why are you bringing these people to our church?" And he said, "Well, why not? You know, they need to get discipled. And this is my church, and I love this church, and I want them to come here." And, you know, honestly, they told him, like, "You're not going to be able to do that. You know, we don't feel comfortable having those types of people in the church." So you can imagine how distraught he was over that. So, you know, he called me, and then I was out in that area and visited him. We sat down, and he was crying. He was shedding tears, just like, I just don't understand. I thought Jesus came to save sinners. Yes, Jesus did, but apparently some people in the church have forgotten that. So he ended up, I told him I thought he should maybe find another church, but he stayed, but he worked around it. He found a way to get the guys into a discipleship program and stuff. But my whole point in telling that story is just, you know, this kind of thing has happened many times over. It wasn't just a first century problem with the Jewish religious leaders. This has happened throughout the history of the church, and it still happens today. And it happens when we forget that we're all sinners. And for the grace of God, there go I. I could have been a prisoner. I could have gone down that same road. So Jesus tells this parable and reminds them that they ought to be rejoicing over this. And then he tells another one. "Or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Doesn't she light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it?" So when something's lost, you go after it. "And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, 'Rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin.' Again, in the same way," Jesus says, "I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents." Wow. You know, I think about that for a moment. You know, sometimes in certain circles, sometimes among Christians, we can, you know, we all long to see people come to know Jesus, and we are excited when that happens, and the more, the better, right? But sometimes, because we're so into, like, the numbers, we kind of forget that God is excited about one. No, God's rejoicing when one person gets saved. The angels in the presence of the Lord are rejoicing over that because any salvation is a miracle. So keeping the perspective right. And then Jesus continued. Now we come to this story. And, you know, Jesus was the master storyteller. And I wonder sometimes if we would not be better evangelists if we were better storytellers. You know, sometimes we can get, you know, so just, it's just the facts. You know, let me lay out the facts for you. And the facts are important, and we should lay them out. But if we can place them in a context of a story brings people in, captivates people. So this is the longest story Jesus ever told. And it's the story of, we commonly call it the story of the prodigal son, the lost son. Prodigal means somebody who's lost their way. So the prodigal of the lost son. But remember the context here. These parables are directed to who? They're directed to the religious leaders who are not excited like they should be about the salvation of sinners. This story is the same. So even though in this story, as we'll see, the first son is the focus of much of the story because he's the wayward son, but what we're going to see is really the story is told to the religious leaders who also appear in the story as the other son. And a lot of times that is missed. We're so focusing on the prodigal son and, you know, what he went off and did, how he squandered his inheritance and all of that. That's all amazing stuff. But we can get so focused on that, we miss the main lesson that is embodied in the older brother. Because the older brother is a picture of the people who were saying, your master welcomes sinners and eats with them. So that's what's happening here in the story. So there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the inheritance. And so he divided it between them. And not long after that, the younger son got together all that he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. This is about as low as you can get from a Jewish standpoint. And he longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. And when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. And so he got up and he went to his father. So Jesus, he's painting this picture. And you can imagine even the opposing party, you can imagine that they're being pulled into this story. They're being captivated by what Jesus is saying. And then he says, but while he was a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, he threw his arms around him, and he kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And so they began to celebrate. And that's a great story in and of itself, isn't it? And it's just such a beautiful reminder of the mercy of God. Because, of course, the Father who sees the Son at a distance is a picture of God the Father. And even though the Son, in his own selfishness and disregard for his Father, even though he demands his inheritance, this was about as insulting as anything could possibly be. Because basically the son just saying, you know, I don't really care about you. All I really care about is what I'm going to get from you. And yet the father complies in the story. And so the son goes off and he squanders everything. So this is reason to just say, okay, well, you know, I have just one son now. In some contexts, a person like this, even today in some contexts, a person like this would just be completely written off. You know, I was talking to a young person this week, and they, you know, not as extreme as what we're reading about here, but they took advantage of people who loved them. They squandered things that were given to them, and they made a mess of everything. And then they, you know, kind of began to suffer the consequences of it, like this one did. And, you know, I was talking to him and I said, you know, but those that you did that to, they have forgiven you, completely forgiven you. And I said, you know why they forgave you? Because they forgave you because of Jesus. They forgave you because of what God has done in their own lives. And I said, because, you know, there are a lot of people out there that would not have forgiven you. So just remember that. Just remember that what you did in another situation with other people might result in them permanently being cut off. And that could have resulted here. So what the young man did was worthy of just being, you got your inheritance, you took it, you squandered it. Hey, you made your bed, now lie in it. But that's not the heart of the Father. Now, notice what happens with this young son. There comes a point where it says he comes to his senses. You know, this is such a story of people who turn their back on the Lord. And plenty of people do this. And it's like they just kind of lose their mind. You know, they throw all common sense and rationality to the wind and they just go off. But then there's a point where they begin to experience the consequences. And thankfully, plenty of times they come to their senses. If you have a prodigal, if you have a wayward loved one, pray they come to their senses. You know, when one of my children was away from the Lord some years ago, I used to pray, Lord, save them from sin, from Satan, and from themselves. That was my prayer. And I would say to that child, I'm praying you will come to your senses. But then it says this, he came to his senses and he said this. He said, I'm going to go back to my father and I'm going to say this. I'm going to say, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. And I remember when my child was in that state and I remember saying, you know, Because there would be moments where sort of like, okay, yeah, you know, I've sinned against you. The consequences are getting a little bit too tough. So, okay, I'm sorry. But there wasn't the acknowledgement of the I've sinned against heaven. And I would say to them, I would say, you know, this is my prayer for you, that you will come to your senses and recognize that first of all, you've sinned against heaven. Because that's the only way you're really going to get out of this spiral that you're in. You can say you sinned against me, and you have, and I'm glad you're acknowledging it, but you might just be acknowledging it because you're suffering the consequences and now you don't want to have those consequences. But when you recognize that I've sinned against heaven, you're saying something different there. You're recognizing that I've offended God. And again, you know, that's what we talked about with David. David was a person when the prophet comes to David and tells him about this horrendous thing that happened in his kingdom. And David says, that man who did that should die. And Nathan says, David, you're that man. And David says, I am that man. I have sinned. So David acknowledges, I have sinned against heaven and against Uriah in that particular case. And so this is, when we think of our prodigal loved ones, Lord, bring them to their senses. Help them to realize that they've sinned against heaven. Because when they realize they've sinned against heaven, then there will be the kind of repentance and transformation that is really what is needed. And so that's what happens here. Now, as we read here, down in verse 25, so bring the fatted calf. My son was dead, now he's alive. Lost, he was found. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field, and when he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. Your brother has come, he replied, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound. And the older brother says, oh, that is so amazing. Oh, thank you, God, that my brother who was dead is alive and who was lost is found. No, he doesn't say that, does he? Because he's the Pharisee. He is the picture of these people who are opposing Jesus because he's welcoming sinners. And what does he do? He's upset about it. So when he calls a servant, you know, what's going on? And then the older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him. My son, the father said, you're always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. Now, note this. It stops there. We don't know anything about the response of the people that Jesus was talking to. But you can be sure that they got the picture from the three parables. And hopefully, some of them at least, woke up to the reality of their own situation. Now, notice in the response of the older brother, notice some of the things he says. He says, all these years I have been slaving for you. So notice his attitude in his service to his father is not serving out of delight because of love, but it's serving out of obligation because of fear. And the point that Jesus is making in saying this is that this is, these men, these self-righteous men, are not serving God out of love. And in their hearts, they feel not only that they have served as slaves, but they really feel that because of that, they are entitled. God owes them something. This is how they thought. God owes them something. You owe me, God, because I have done all of these things. That person over there, what have they ever done for you? I've done all of this. But even in saying that, have you really done that for God? No, it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like in the end, you're really doing that for you. Now, some of you have heard me reference or quote Timothy Keller. Some of you know Tim was a great pastor, theologian, and Tim wrote a book called The Prodigal God. And this book has had such a wonderful impact on people. And he tells the story, but he focuses on the older brother. And what Tim had a unique insight into that has really been helpful for people is he had an insight into churched people who, even though they would say they're saved by grace, really believed that they were earning God's favor and that God owed them something. And through this great little book, The Prodigal God, he goes to show really how because in the story, we look at the story and we think almost exclusively of the problems with the younger brother, the prodigal. But what Tim points out is that no, both of these are estranged from the father. One is obviously estranged from the father. The other doesn't appear to be estranged from the father because they're going through the motions of doing the duty. But the reality is there is no heart connection. And, you know, he would speak to people who maybe grew up in a church kind of a situation and never did anything bad, at least in their own thinking. They never went out and partied. They never went out and got drunk. They never went out and wasted their lives. They've been faithful. They've been serving God. And then maybe they see somebody who comes in from just a deep place of sin and is welcomed in and love is being lavished on them. And they look at that and they think, what are they doing that for? You know, I've been here the whole time. Nobody's ever patted me on the back. Nobody's ever told me what a great job I'm doing. And in the lives of many people, the Lord used this book by Keller specifically with that type of person to show them that that is as much sin as what the prodigal was doing. To just get people to see that if your salvation is in any way, shape, or form based on your performance or your righteousness, then you're just as bad off as the prodigal son who squandered everything. Because you're still in sin, and your works cannot bring you out of that sin.
For the month of December, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled Confronting Christianity by Rebecca McLaughlin. Sickness, disease, broken homes, poverty, people young and old all around the world are experiencing distress. Have you ever wondered how a loving God could allow so much suffering in the lives of people he claims to love? Well, in her book, Confronting Christianity, Rebecca McLaughlin tackles this question and 11 others about Christianity. If you've ever wrestled with questions about Christianity, or want to be prepared for those who are, we encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com to order Confronting Christianity by Rebecca McLaughlin. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you this book as our way to say thank you. We do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of Luke. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.